Hello, I'm John Wilson. Thank you for downloading this edition of Master Tapes from BBC Radio 4. Welcome to Master Tapes and to Edwyn Collins and his band playing A Girl Like You from Edwyn's 1994 album Gorgeous George. It was his third solo record following the four he recorded with his first band Orange Juice. Gorgeous George also included the campaign for Real Rock, If You Could Love Me and Make Me Feel Again. This edition of Master Tapes will tell the story not only of the making of Gorgeous George, but also of an astonishing personal struggle to recover from serious illness. In 2005, Edwyn suffered two massive strokes that left him unable to walk, talk or read, let alone play the guitar or sing, with the tireless help of his wife, Grace Maxwell. Edwyn has spent the last 8 years relearning how to do all of those things and to begin again as a recording artist and producer. Grace is here with Edwyn on stage at Maida Vale to help retell his life stories and to help tell Edwyn's musical stories, his songs. We're also joined by members of his band, Carwin Ellis on guitar, James Warburn on the other guitar, and Sean Reed on keyboards and vocals. Edwyn and Grace, welcome to Master Tapes.
Thank you very much.
It's great to see you here. I mean, the three of us last met and spoke on Radio 4, in fact.
Yeah.
What, probably 2 years after you had those strokes?
My studio.
In your studio.
Yeah.
And it was the first broadcast interview that you had done. And that was quite a major step for you, wasn't it?
I know. Tell me about it. It was. 6 months in hospital, I couldn't say a word.
Yeah.
Yes and no, and the possibilities are endless.
Yeah.
And
why that phrase in particular, do you think?
I don't know. It's a good luck charm.
But that day I was there, I think you'd just come up with the beginning, the seeds of a new song, and it was called Searching for the Truth.
Yes.
And you sang me a couple of lines. And I mean, that seemed like a major breakthrough the first time that you...
Yes, it was. A simple song, of course. I'm searching for the truth. I'm searching for the truth.
I mean, I remember you played that song, and you had a couple of lines, really, and that's all it was. And then you paused and you said, it's crap, really. But it's my crap.
Yeah. Did I really?
You did.
Yeah.
The album that we're here to talk about today, Gorgeous George, was written and recorded over a decade before the illness, before the strokes.
Yes.
But that in itself was a significant album, wasn't it, when you were recording it in 93, 94?
Yeah.
Because it was marking a start for you as a solo artist.
I mean,
you really wanted this to be an important record.
I had my Neve Desk, of course. Seb helped me, my engineer.
I should explain this. Is it one of those big old 1960s analog desks?
Yeah, 1969.
Mixing desk.
Yes.
But just to kind of set the scene as well, and just a bit of prehistory,
For
those that don't know, I mean, a lot of people know you from this period and from the Gorgeous George album.
Yes.
But when you were very young, your first band, Orange Juice, still loved to this day, a very influential band as well, that emerged from Glasgow in, what, the late 1970s, and you had a fantastic... run of singles into the early 80s. And it was a short-lived band, but it was a great band, wasn't it?
Thank you very much, John.
Why were you together for such a short period of time, though?
Basically, David McClyman.
Oh, stop.
I'm not crazy about David McClyman.
Differences?
Yes, musical differences.
Classic musical differences.
Let's see.
Okay.
Let's see. But
there was a few.
He's fantastically honest, isn't he?
I know.
I mean, you can,
shocking.
Yeah.
It got him into a lot of trouble at the time. There'll be people here that remember some of Edwin's fantastic interviews.
Even before my stroke.
Yeah, you used to give interviews.
No, it's true.
That just to kind of make my eyes water.
Golden yeah. times then.
Yeah.
And then you split up, and then you had a couple of solo records, and you started producing yourself. You became a producer.
Yeah.
You got this desk that was so important to you, the old yes. Neve desk.
Yeah.
And then we heard a clip of it there at the beginning of the programme, just a snippet. But, the single that stands out from this record that is still played around the world to this day is Girl Like You. And that's built around a Northern Soul sample.
Yeah, yeah.
It's built around the beat, isn't
one,
it?
1, 2, 3.
It's 1, 2, 3, exactly, yeah, which, is, yeah. which is Len Barry, isn't it?
Yeah, yes, Len Barry. I'm got awful trouble with that, the sample.
You didn't clear it? You didn't ask permission?
No. I didn't.
And it's a very well-known song.
Well, the thing was, it's the sample is a roll, isn't
yeah,
it,
yeah.
at the beginning, and that's what it was. I had no idea until, of course, we assumed, like all of Edwin's records at that around that time, that, you know, they would sort of come and go in a blaze of obscurity.
Cheers for that, Grace.
So you start off with that riff, with
yes.
that sample. And yeah. did you write the lyric and the rest of the song around that? Was that the building block for the rest of the song? Can you remember?
No. I started off with acoustic guitar.
Yeah.
I never met a girl like you before.
So that's
so on.
Yeah. So that would have been playing round and round in your
yes.
head. And then do you have a set of lyrics ready that you then match to those chords, or did you work from there?
No. I worked the middle eight. Made me a night a devil in me. I hope to God I'm talking metaphorically. Hope to God I'm talking allegorically. Know that I'm talking about the way I feel. And that's good enough. Yes, that,
yeah, that's more than good enough. Apart from the fact you use several multi-syllable words within
yeah,
that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's not many pop songs that use words allegorically, metaphorically. Yeah. And what did you have in mind when you were writing that lyric? There's a key line in that, isn't there, about, too many protest singers, not enough protest songs.
Yes.
I mean, was that in response to any particular singer or group or event?
No.
It was just a good line.
It's a good line. Near the end, Vic and Sean, the harmonies together.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's all right. Yeah, it's all right.
And Sean,
yeah.
Sean's here with us today on the keyboard. So do you remember that, Sean? You were set the task of those quite insistent backing harmonies that it's on the fade out, isn't it?
That's right, yeah. In fact, I think Vic came up with that line, I think.
And
Vic spotted that as a strong single. He was saying, people are going to love this one, Edwin.
I think you've got a hit on your hands,
Edwin.
And what did you think, Sean? Did you think, yeah, this is special?
No, I didn't. No, yeah.
So what were you doing just to show us the backing vocals?
I was just singing a backing vocal. Well, I was doing hand claps, which go like this.
Yeah.
You might have heard something like that before
yeah.
on other records.
Sounds familiar. Yeah. Yeah.
And I was singing a backing vocal with Vic, which was, yeah, it's all right. Yeah, it's all right. Yeah, it's just over and over again over the outro.
Yeah, yeah.
As Edwin went nuts on his
guitar.
And one of the other players on this record is Paul Cook from the Sex Pistols, the drummer from the Sex Pistols, although he's
no,
not...
The cymbals.
Yeah.
It was Paul Cook.
Yeah. Was he not playing xylophone? Is he not playing that xylophone line as well?
It was me.
Oh, was that you?
I'm
doing you out of the job there, sorry.
Quite talented back then. Before my stroke.
So while A Girl Like You became the big pop hit all around the world, the album actually starts with a track which boasts almost an anti-pop sentiment.
Yeah.
It's a very caustic song, The Campaign for Real Rock, a savage
yeah.
tirade against the pop posers
I know.
And the American rock bands and
what?
The truly detestable Summer Festival, which is the payoff line at the end of the song. What prompted this song and why was it so angry?
I don't know, John. I was really angry at the world, I must admit. And why They like me.
Why don't they like me? Really?
Really? Is that
so
what you felt?
It was born of bitterness, Edwin. It was born of personal bitterness.
Yes, it was.
And jealousy. I
So you saw a lot of your peers kept being successful, and you weren't having that anymore.
Why?
Why not me? Yeah. Well, let's just look at some of the lyrics. Don't try so hard to be different. The cracks are beginning to show. You drift like a cloud through the festival crowd in a frock coat from Savile Row. And, I mean, they're really fantastic couplets. Then it goes on, you've just been to an all-night party where I have to admit it takes pluck to go out on the floor and proclaim what a bore and a T-shirt that reads disco sucks. It's like a limerick, in fact, isn't it?
It's like one of Edwin's clever lyrics full of references and do you know as much stuff as I do? Do you get this?
What?
He used to write lyrics like that quite a lot, didn't he? Yes. Do you know what I mean?
Do you want to play a bit of Campaign for Real Wrong?
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, just to give us a blast of a reminder, because it's a very long song as well.
Yes, 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 it's a summer festival, truly detestable summer festival. Yes, 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 it's a summer festival, a truly detestable summer festival. Yes, 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 it's a summer festival, truly detestable summer festival. Yes, 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 it's a summer festival, truly detestable summer festival.
The great irony, of course, is that after you got yourself back on the road to recovery, I think 2009, you played the Glastonbury Festival. So was that a truly detestable summer festival? Was that all right?
It was a good laugh. Grace doesn't like Glastonbury. Mm.
Glastonbury is like a sort of refugee camp in reverse, you know. People get stuck in refugee camps and go through layers of bureaucracy to try and get out of them. It's the exact opposite.
The dry, witty, observational lyrics, I mean, they've been there right from the outset, but, I mean, we hear it all throughout this album, and again on the title track on Gorgeous George himself. And, again, is that a character in mind? Are you writing about a particular person, or is Gorgeous George an archetype?
Oh.
It was a bit of a particular person, It was a bit of a particular person that we met. It was briefly in Edwin's life, in fact. There was a time in the late 80s where I thought the reason his career is not going very well is probably the fact that he's not got a more professional manager and it's time for him to try
something. And that was you.
That was me. Mm. So I decided to get him somebody else so that I would step aside. And he had Gorgeous George managing him for a very short time. So that's who it's about, basically. He's a person that's... And the guy's out there and he knows it's about him. He goes, I won my royalties for that.
But were you always writing songs about people then, Edwin? I mean, people that you met, you would meet people and think, there's a song in this character.
I suppose I was a bit of an intellectual. After my stroke, I'm daft.
But you took enormous amount of pleasure in the lyrics for Gorgeous George. You thought they were really good. You were very, very pleased with yourself with that set of lyrics.
But were you the sort of person that would take revenge in song? If somebody wound you up or crossed you, you would get your own back in the lyric, yeah?
Yes.
It's his best tool, absolutely powerful tool.
Having to start again from scratch, as we said, I mean, you had to learn to walk again and talk again and read and write. And you talk about being, and admitting to being, quite a caustic character in the past. And you were never afraid of speaking your mind, whether you were doing an interview in the press or writing songs about real people. Do you think you've become a more tolerant person?
Yes, I have. I'm mellow. And
how did the songwriting process change? Once you started working your way back into melodies and words, and we talked before about that very first song that you came up with, Searching for the Truth, that was the first attempt. But since then, you have been writing, you've recorded a new album. How can you hear that the songs, do you know that the songs are significantly different to before?
The lyrics, I'm finally getting there, the lyrics. Losing sleep is direct and to the point. I'm experimenting with understated. For example, the verse, the years went by and I'm feeling my age as the story unfolds. I'm a singer of sorts. Yeah, so it's...
And have songs been a way of finding yourself again? Because, I mean, that is part of the process, isn't it? And right from the start of the process of recovery, Grace, you've written about this in your book, which is called Falling and Laughing, taken from an Orange Juice song, in fact, the very first Orange Juice single. But the idea of having to get Edwin to kind of remember who he was in a way, did that help by writing songs and to write about yourself and who you were and where you'd been?
After my stroke, I knew... who I was, but it takes a long time to recover, and it's good therapy for me.
And the songs were therapy then, were they?
Yes.
It wasn't a pressure that you were putting on yourself. You weren't thinking, I used to be a pop star, I used to be a singer, I've got to get back to doing this. It actually helped to be back in the studio.
What it is, I was always... worked hard composing my songs and singing and communicating, and language is a weird thing to get back my song vision in a way.
Yeah, and so many of the songs on Gorgeous George, if you listen to them, they have a poignancy now, even though they were written and recorded a decade before the stroke.
Yeah.
You can read things into them which makes it sound like they're about the experience. A song like Low Expectations.
Yeah.
From Gorgeous George, a beautiful ballad-like song.
Yeah.
But there are lines in that which seem to chime with your situation in 2005 and now.
Yes.
So and tell us something about Low Expectations and the way that you originally conceived it.
Grace.
I don't know. It's...
Lower expectations.
Yeah. Oh, to me.
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
It was a message to me, apparently.
No.
It's true. No, I remember you telling me this. It was a sort of a song to sort of try and cheer me up in a peculiar way, because life was quite a struggle at that time. You know, not get too down on myself, which is weird when you think that it's called Low Expectations. It's just that you've been down this road before, which is not to say you're bored or that you shouldn't want for more. It's just your expectations should be lower. And it's just very, very, very Edwin-like to take this kind of approach to a kind of a love song, I suppose.
Shall we hear a blast of that?
Yeah. Go outside. So you set out on your own. You shut up shop. You're leaving home. You see no need to settle down in the crippled crook of your orphan town. You've been down this road before, which is not to say you're bored, or that you shouldn't want for more. It's just your expectations should be lower. Should be lower. There must be somewhere more than this, more than ideal homes or domestic bliss. What is there left for you to do? 'Cause you've seen the future and it's nothing new. You've been down this road before, which is not to say you're bored, just your expectations. Should be Lord, should be Lord. Thank you.
Okay. That was sensational.
Thank you. Well,
so, I mean, an incredibly moving song, but it does have added poignancy now, doesn't it? Because it may have been written as a message to Grace for her to lower her expectations. Yeah. But in a way, it's almost like, you know, you've had to change your life. Your expectations about the way you live your life have had to change, haven't they?
Sometimes.
Yeah.
I don't recognise my own words. Before my stroke, I was clear and precise, but sometimes I don't understand what I'm getting.
Yeah. And is that the case with that song? That's something that's...
Sometimes.
It almost becomes a brand new song.
Yes.
I mean, that's quite refreshing in a way, that you have this fantastic, huge, magnificent body of work to draw on, and it all seems incredibly fresh to you in a way.
Before my stroke, I was quite, let's say, arrogant in a way.
I think you are. Edwin's personality has altered somewhat. He's a much more optimistic person. I must say, though, as he continues to get better, I see more and more of the sort of acerbic side of him returning as well.
What about you? You're a nasty little woman. Oh, only kidding.
He's back, Grace, isn't he? He's back.
Really? You know what I mean? The side of him that drops you in it wherever you go, that's back for sure.
I love you, Grace.
Yeah, right.
Sorry.
Okay.
And we talk about listening to that song now and hearing new meaning in it. I mean, there's another one, Make Me Feel Again. And yeah. You read the lyrics of that song, and again, it's almost like it was written in the last few years. You know, the lines about, I can't sleep a wink, am I losing control, I'm doubled up in agony, won't you help me unfold? I mean, you have no way of knowing, and even more so when you released the Home Again album, which was recorded just before the stroke. And there's so many songs on that, they have a sense of what was about to come.
For boarding. I taken too much sulpidine and headaches, galore, driving me cuckoo.
Yeah. And that was happening before the stroke, so you had no idea what was about to happen.
Yeah.
But there were warning signs then early on.
Yes.
And were you aware of this, Grace?
I'm not as aware as I ought to have been. I think Edwin was concealing quite a lot of it. He hadn't been to the doctor since he was a teenager, you see.
He's a man. And,
really.
I was too frightened.
Yeah, he didn't like to go to the doctor. He was just about to get investigated, get these headaches investigated when what happened. But I think it was really, I didn't take it as seriously as I ought to have done.
Until you came home that day and you found him and he was unconscious.
Yeah.
And you knew straight away.
Yeah, I didn't really know a lot about strokes.
Chris was... Tell me, John, I was lying my hand down and
twisted in the way that you're doing at the moment.
It's something you replay for I don't anymore, but I used to replay those hours over and over again in my mind, like a film, you know, and think, how could you stop it and what could I have done and lots of all... But I think I've realised now with the passing of the years and the fact that Edwin's restored to... normality, you know, form of normality.
Just about.
there's no point in any of that stuff. And
Dwelling on anything like that. Grace, in hospital, 6 months, she stood beside me every day. Wonderful grace. It's amazing.
It was fortunate. Edwin was my job, so it wasn't any, you know. I didn't have to ask the boss for time off, if you know what I mean.
But music is a form of therapy, though. I mean, being able to sing is helping the whole process of communication.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, there's no doubt in my mind that everything Edwin does, recording, producing, writing, performing, doing interviews, every single thing goes to recovery for him. Every single thing at age recovery. He's very fortunate to have all these routes to recovery that most people don't have. And he continues. It gives the lie to the idea that there's a sort of limit to how much better you can get. He's still getting better.
Well, we're going to play out with some more music, but that's all we've got time for in this first part of the programme. Edwin Collins, Grace Maxwell and the band, thank you for joining us on Master Tapes. There's a lot more to discuss with Edwin and Grace about Gorgeous George and the rest of Edwin's life, his illness, his recovery and his continuing career. In the second part, the B-side, our studio audience here at Maida Vale will be posing the questions. You can hear that tomorrow afternoon at 3:30 on Radio 4. In the meanwhile, though, Edwin, James, Carwin and Sean are going to play us out with... Well, it's got to be the classic, isn't it? A Girl Like You.
I never met a girl like you before. Just like in a song from days of yore.
Remember, you can find the full version of this and other songs recorded during our live sessions on the Master Tapes pages at the Radio 4 website, along with photographs, videos and the other editions of the series.
The goal was to make a pure Johnny Cash record.
BBC Radio 4 is thumbing through the back catalogue.
You could play a guitar solo of 10 minutes because people were actually listening.
Re-releasing the best music documentaries from the archive.
I could get in a band and nobody would dare mention, like, oh, she's okay for a girl. You just wouldn't say that in the punk thing.
It's like throwing down the glove and saying, if you really want me to sing to you, you're really going to have to shut up and listen.
Radio 4 on Music, the new weekly download.
You have to fight and you have to keep fighting and never stop.
Available now on the BBC Radio 4 website. Oh,